This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and online at kexp.org. My guest this morning is Wayne Pacelli, President and CEO of the Humane Society of the United States. Taking a special interest in law reform, Wayne has been the leading strategist in getting animal protection laws enacted by direct action of the electorate, designing winning campaigns in a dozen states for ballot initiatives that outlawed cockfighting, factory farming practices, bear baiting, and other inhumane practices. He was named one of the Nonprofit Times Executives of the Year for his leadership in responding to the Hurricane Katrina crisis. Wayne Pacelli is here today to tell us about his book, The Bond, Our Kinship with Animals, Our Call to Defend Them, published in 2011. Welcome, Wayne.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
What led you to write your book, The Bond? What was your purpose?
You know, animal protection has really been an adult profession of mine. I have been deeply, deeply focused and committed to advancing a better approach to dealing with animals, and it obviously stems back to my childhood and my own love of animals then. And I have had so many rich experiences, so many painful experiences during the last 25 years, whether going up to the ice floes off of Atlantic Canada to see the seals who unfortunately are victims of being clubbed and shot, or being in Yellowstone National Park and trying to protect the buffalo from being shot there, or being on the scene at puppy mill operations or animal fighting operations. I felt like I should really capture and consolidate these thoughts and offer a bit of a memoir as well as a manifesto and a way forward for our society in terms of its dealings with animals. I think that what we're doing to animals in so many respects is unfair and it's wrong. And I also note that there's so much good that goes on for animals in our society, so many people who care. We clearly have the capability to turn the situation around and be better when it comes to caring for our fellow creatures.
What do you see as the underlying nature of the bond between humans and other animals?
You know, it's the title of the book, and for me, it really captures so much. I mean, when I was a little kid, I was very, very empathetic toward animals. I was very interested in animals. I mean, they were just a dazzling set of creatures that I couldn't get enough of. And I think most kids learn about the world through animals. I mean, they are fascinated by animals. They want to interact with them. They want to draw pictures of them. They want to read books with pictures of the animals. And I began to look at this issue more broadly and not just look at our own moment in time or our own culture, but looking at cultures around the world, looking at these issues over time. And it was evident to me that there's a bond that's built into humans. We're a social being. We crave interaction with other people in order to be healthy and full and complete. And that's the same with animals. And if you look back even to hunting and gathering communities, tribal societies, they actually kept pets. I mean, we think of them as killing wild animals to survive, which, of course, was a necessity for them. They had rituals of atonement and apology. But they also kept wild animals of many, many varieties as pets. Obviously, you look back to the way that domestication occurred, where animals and humans had to take some steps toward each other to bring wild animals into our environment, and then we began to control their reproduction and their lives. One might think of that as a form of kind of domination or even subjugation, but I think that's too harsh a reading of it. I mean, I think there's a kinship that also exists between people and animals, even back then, 10 or 15,000 years ago, at the dawn of domestication. You know, you look at our society now, I mean, we just can't get enough of animals. We have 171 million dogs and cats in our homes, 70 million of us are wildlife watchers. We are interested in animals. We've got a network devoted to them called Animal Planet. It's just part of the essence of being human, is to connect with animals. And in the first part of my book, I really explain the underpinnings and even the biochemistry of the bond between humans and animals.
Would you comment on the significance of domestication for humans and animals?
Well, it was obviously one of the major moments in the entire arc of human history and prehistory, obviously. You know, you look at the paleontological records and the archaeological records, and you obviously see that human beings have been around for quite a long time. For 99% of human history, we were hunters and gatherers, and we had low densities, low populations. We were spread across the planet over time. with domestication, with the dog first, but then with farm animals, goats and sheep and pigs that came a few thousand years later, you can look at just human population on a grid over time, and you can see a steady rise from that point. And of course, in the last couple of centuries, you see a very, very steep increase in human population. I think we hit 1 billion people in the early part of the 19th century, and now we're at 7 billion people. So much human population growth has occurred in this era, but it was domestication 10,000 years ago of farm animals that really changed the way that we lived with the land. We moved from nomadic communities, wandering, hunting, gathering communities without really the ability to acquire much in the way of possessions. We began to amass resources and food. Communities developed, eventually cities developed, states developed, and the rest, so to speak, is history.
What effect has breeding animals to suit humans had on animals?
Well, obviously, you know, we've brought them into this world. I mean, we so control their reproduction, so many of them would not exist but for this deliberate act of humans to bring animals into the world. Historically, it was for multiple purposes. I mean, one could say that dogs had some companionship value even way back when, but they also had a variety of practical utilities, whether barking to alert people to danger, especially at night when the threats came from the dark, and a dog warning people by barking would be a sentinel and a defense. Obviously, for animals raised for food, these animals are used for a variety of purposes: meat, milk, eggs, wool, for clothing. You know, I think that that relationship historically has been based on one of some level of kinship and animal husbandry in terms of the rearing of certain domesticated animals for these economic purposes and for personal uses, did have a level of respect built into it. In the last 50 years, that has changed dramatically with the advent of factory farming and a separation of the farmer from the animals, an incredible ratio of small number of farmers to an enormous number of animals, where the farmer cannot possibly care for the animals on an individual basis. They're just population management programs. And the animals, they've been turned into meat, milk, and egg-producing machines, and we kind of jam them into large windowless buildings. And this, to me, in the second part of the book, is what I go into, is the breaking of the bond, the severing of the bond, where factory farming and captive hunts and dogfighting and cockfighting and the seal clubbing, I mean, these are forms of kind of alienation from nature, a disrespect for animals, a separation from an understanding of the animals except in the narrowest sense for economic purposes and economic value.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Wayne Pacelli, President and CEO of the Humane Society of the United States and author of the book, The Bond, Our Kinship with Animals, Our Call to Defend Them. And you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP 90.3 FM, and on the web at kexp.org. You've alluded to a number of the ways that we've broken the bond with animals, but what do you consider the worst abuses or lack of care for animals?
Well, you know, I think that practices like dogfighting and cockfighting are barbaric, and the use is so gratuitous. I mean, allowing animals to hack each other to death or bite each other to death just for our amusement. I mean, the moral problem for anyone who is alert to animals is evident when you're causing this much distress for such a frivolous purpose. But, you know, it's maybe 250,000 pit bulls a year. It's probably a few million birds in the United States alone who are subjected to cockfighting. In terms of kind of orders of magnitude, it's clearly the rearing of animals for food production, mainly in these factory farm type systems. 10 billion animals with a B raised for food in the United States every year. The preponderance of them are chickens, who are selectively bred for fast rates of growth. They often have a number of physical problems because we're valuing certain commercial parts of their bodies, and we're creating these very unhealthy animals in order to get them to market by 6 weeks of age and to slaughter them at 6 weeks of age so then the meat products can go to market. But, you know, there are 280 million laying hens. Most of them are confined in small battery cages. There are pigs. The biggest problem in the pig industry is the confinement of breeding sows in gestation crates, which are 2-foot by 7-foot cages that the sows essentially, you know, are immobilized in for the bulk of their lives. So I would say that this harsh movement toward industrial meat dairy and egg production is one of the biggest problems. Of course, the wildlife issues are enormous because we're having such an enormous impact because of the footprint of humanity. 7 billion of us on a planet that's, 70% water, so the land portion, while enormous in size, is finite, and we are moving into animals' territory, we're developing habitats and driving out animals or sometimes even, crushing and killing them. And then, of course, we're taking parts of animals for the wildlife trade, killing them for their ivory or their rhino horn or hawksbill turtle shells and so many other purposes. And, of course, we also kill them for trapping, for fur. We kill them for sport, trophies. So there are so many threats to wildlife. And, of course, overlaying this with the larger threats of climate change and the kind of inexorable march of humanity, a lot of wild animals are victims of humanity every year as well.
Historically, what led to organized efforts to protect animals?
Well, I think our nation had to deal with some of the most urgent problems in terms of human-to-human relations. And, of course, in the 19th century, that was chattel slavery. And, we have a set of founding documents in our country that speak to the rights of the individual, talk about democratic decision-making, talk about participatory government, talk about justice and fairness. You can't have a society built on those values and principles and allow slavery. And it took decades of concerted action by abolitionists and political leaders in order to end slavery and, of course, a great civil war. And I don't think it was ironic that right after the Civil War ended and we did abolish slavery, that we then turned our attention to animals. The first animal protection group was formed in 1866, and then a raft of them were formed in the late 1860s, early 1870s, and then it just spread from there. And now in our country, we have 10,000 animal welfare organizations, and you've got groups devoted to every animal, every animal from prairie dog groups to guinea pig groups to rabbits to farm animals to animals in testing to mountain lions to snow leopards, whales, dolphins, you name it. And then you've got broadly interested groups like the Humane Society of the United States that look at the human relationship to all animals, whether they're domesticated or wild.
What do you see as the most successful steps that have been taken to protect animals?
Well, I think it's been incremental progress. I think we've upgraded anti-cruelty statutes in all the states methodically. HSUS has really been at the forefront in advancing that. We're soon to get Mississippi to become the 47th state to have felony-level penalties for malicious acts of cruelty. We already have 50 states that have made dogfighting a felony. In 2007, we got the last state in the country to ban cockfighting. Louisiana was the only state that had legal cockfighting until we worked in the legislature to outlaw it. We have had in recent years some signature wins on the issue of factory farming. In California, we had a measure called Proposition 2 to stop the intensive confinement of certain animals on factory farms. Now in Washington State, HSUS and a broad coalition of animal welfare, public health, environmental organizations, small farmers, are backing ballot initiative 1130 to stop the confinement of animals in battery cages. And we've been opposing kind of a faux reform effort by the egg industry in Olympia to have a ridiculously long phase out of these confinement practices and just to give the animals a couple more inches is what they want to do and give themselves 15 years to do it. So we've got real reform with initiative 1130.
What do you hear as the most common arguments against animal protection?
They've changed through the years. And, people used to be deniers of animal intelligence and even animal suffering. And they said, animals don't matter. They're just animals. Who cares? This is what we have to do to survive as a society. More and more now, as I write in my book, The Bond, the opponents of animal protection try to claim the mantle of animal welfare. So their response to Initiative 1130 is not to embrace it, but it's to try to say they're doing real animal welfare reform by working with lawmakers close to the egg industry to give the animals just a tiny little increment of space and then to give 15 years for the farmers to phase that in. So they try to make it sound like they're the animal welfare people. The other argument which crops up all the time is economics, that we have to do this because it's our livelihood. We're going to lose jobs if we're good to animals, if we're giving them more space or we're attending to their needs. And, I think that's just such a false argument. In 2011, we as a species are so creative, we're so innovative. I think we can figure out a way to have a successful economic output and not leave a trail of animal victims. And I go through this in detail in my book, and the last chapter of my book is called The Humane Economy, where I talk about an economy that's grounded on the values that matter to us, including opposition to animal cruelty, and how we can monetize this concern for animals, and we can grow our economy, we can have a robust commerce, again, without victimizing animals. It's not a choice of one or the other. And I give a lot of examples, whether it's the movement historically from whaling to whale watching in America, the example that we're fighting right now in Canada with the clubbing of the seals and developing a new alternative economy built around appreciation of the seals. You can look to sustainable and humane agriculture as an alternative to factory farming. I mean, this is the future for us. And I call in the bond for us to get going in putting all the pieces of this humane economy together now and very deliberately moving ahead, because that's what's going to be sustainable and successful for us as a society.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Wayne Pacelle, President and CEO of the Humane Society of the United States and author of the book, The Bond, Our Kinship with Animals, Our Call to Defend Them. And you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. If you look at the population of the United States, would you categorize the different attitudes you have found in regard to animal rights and roughly how many people fall into each group?
Well, you know, there's a real continuum on the issues, and there's a real diversity of views in some ways within the animal protection issues. I mean, there's no support, for instance, for organized animal fighting, like dog fighting, cock fighting. You can go anywhere in the country, you see opposition. There's broad opposition to animal cruelty in general. I think all the surveys that we've seen, from the biggest agricultural producing states to the smallest, there's consistent opposition to confinement of animals on factory farms. I think that on the issue of fur and killing animals for fur, there's a majority of Americans who oppose killing animals for fur, but you know, there's a substantial number of people who don't seem to have a problem with it as well. It varies issue by issue. I would say that the states on the Pacific coast and some of the East Coast have the most developed animal welfare policies, and you have in some of the states in the Midwest that the Farm Bureau and other interest groups exert enormous influence on lawmakers and have stymied many popular reforms. So I think the people in the country are generally supportive of animal protection, and that runs through the wide range of issues that we work on at the Humane Society of the United States and that are covered in the bond. But you find that there are interest groups that stand in the way more effectively in some settings than others.
Would you give some examples of the groups that have most strongly fought against animal protection and what steps they have taken to prevent the animals from being protected?
Well, a group like the National Rifle Association, you know, there's not a big debate about banning hunting in the United States. The debate on hunting and trapping is over particularly abusive practices like live pigeon shoots in Pennsylvania, bear baiting activities in Idaho, captive hunts in Texas where animals are shot inside a fenced enclosure for a fee and a guaranteed kill arrangement. Those practices are not only at odds with the majority of Americans and the people in those states, but they're at odds even with the hunter's ethic of quickly killing an animal or giving the animal a fair chance to escape. And the NRA has stood in the way of reform, and they've used their considerable political power to stymie popular reforms that, again, are consistent with the hunter's own ethic of giving the animal a fair chance or quickly killing the animal. Another group is the American Farm Bureau Federation and many of the state farm bureaus. They have opposed efforts to give animals more space on these large industrial facilities. They've opposed reforming efforts to stop the slaughter of horses for human consumption. They have been involved in trying to protect the opportunity for large farmers to dose animals with antibiotics on these factory farms, which is a public health threat because antibiotic-resistant bacteria develop in these settings. And I go through some of the others, even groups like the American Kennel Club. They oppose efforts to crack down on puppy mills. And it's just really, again, at odds with where a lot of the members of these groups stand, but the leadership has just taken a more extreme position.
Why do you think the leadership has taken a more extreme position in these cases?
I think that on the animal issues, they get a slippery slope mentality, and they think that any reform is going to lead to a cascade of other reforms, and eventually they're not going to be able to do the things that they care about. And I think that what they need to understand is that if they do have practices like hunting or agriculture, they've got to be able to defend the core activity. When they debate these extreme and particularly abusive practices, I think they damage their own reputation. And I think that they really allow animal protection groups like HSUS to define the terms of the debate, that these guys will basically defend anything. You know, if you attach hunting as a brand to any of these activities that don't even involve hunting, I mean, live pigeon shooting where birds are collected and then you stick them in a box and then open the box and they shoot them as they flutter out. I mean, that's not hunting. I mean, the animals are not used for food. There's no license involved. So I think that they just have a knee-jerk opposition and they have a fear. I mean, essentially they're fearful of what a society that would logically apply these principles of opposition to cruelty would do, and they just try to hold the line at even some of the worst practices.
In your view, where should efforts towards animal protection be focused over the next decade?
You know, I think we've got a moral responsibility to look at animals in crisis everywhere. But we can't just focus on rescuing animals and solving the animal homelessness problem and treating animals who are injured. I mean, we need to focus on that a great deal. But we also need to work on the front end before animals get into that situation so we can stop the flood of animals who are in distress and in crisis. So, you know, many groups have prevention of cruelty as part of their mission. And that means we need to work on policy solutions to get the animals out of these factory farms to begin with. And we need to stop these mass killings of wildlife like the Canadian seals. So, you know, that's achieved through strategic political action, work with corporations. And I think it's just finding a better way. I mean, literally building each piece of this humane economy element by element in order to have an economy that reflects our values. I mean, economics is critical to our success as individuals and our success as a society. But we can't just kind of mindlessly pursue profit at the expense of our values. I mean, when you do that, you get things like slavery or you get things like animal cruelty or destruction of the environment. We're good enough, we're smart enough as a species to make sure that our values infuse our economic activity. And that's where you ultimately create sustainable economic systems, when your businesses and operations reflect the values of the people.
Would you comment on the goals of the World Animal Forum for animal protection?
Well, the World Animal Forum is it's a group of leaders of the major worldwide animal protection organizations, and we get together each year to talk about long-term strategies for our cause and long-term goals. So we talk about ending euthanasia of healthy and treatable dogs and cats in shelters by 2020, an end to factory farming by 2050, and an end to animal testing by 2025. So rather than just be focused on our immediate problems that we're so immersed with and focused on because the animal crises are so bad right in front of us, we want to take a step back and look where we're going to go and set some markers for the progress of our movement.
What do you hope your book will accomplish?
I hope it sheds light on problems that are occurring, reminds people of their responsibilities on a personal level and political level, and pushes us in a direction as a society to be better to animals. I mean, animals are capable of feeling and suffering. They are at our mercy. We hold all the cards in the relationship. We have all the power. We can do whatever we want to animals. We can kill them and exploit them and crush them, or we can be merciful and good and decent to them. And I think it's just part of our humanity. I mean, the word humane, the root of it is human. This is really about us more than it is about them. It's about how we behave and how we use our power, either for ill or for good. And the bond gives us a head start. The bond lowercase gives us a head start in having the right feelings, but it's up to us as individuals to stay on that right course and that right track and do the right thing for a fellow creature. And I wrote the book, The Bond, capital B, in order to try to achieve that.
What are some steps that individuals can take to protect animals? What are the most important steps they can take?
Well, in the book, because, you know, I really try to inspire people about the good works that are happening in society, call them to action on the big problems. And at the end of the book, I wrote 50 ways to help animals. And You know, this involves thinking about your food choices, other forms of personal behavior, purchasing cruelty-free cosmetics and household products, avoiding wearing fur, adopting a friend for life from a local animal shelter, or fostering an animal waiting for a home. You know, it goes to being involved in your community, getting trained and activated, becoming a better advocate, becoming a disaster responder for animals, volunteering to help animals, working with local schools. I mean, there's so many things that we can do. And, of course, joining groups like HSUS. I mean, it's through the collective voice of millions of people that we can exert enormous influence, whether it's on state lawmakers or members of Congress or corporations. I mean, it's through that collective voice that we amplify our voice and magnify our impact.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
I hope they enjoy the book, The Bond. They can get it on Amazon or Barnes & Noble online. They can go to any local bookseller to buy it. And I hope that it deepens people's involvement in the cause of protecting animals. It's a noble cause. It's an other-centered cause. How we treat the least among us is a measure of our humanity. And unfortunately, with this issue, there are moral problems everywhere. The use of animals is intertwined with our economy, with our daily lives. But that means that those moral problems are also moral opportunities. We can do things in our daily lives to change the situation for animals, and we can build the sort of humane society that we want. But it is an act of human agency. We have to do it and not leave it to someone else.
Well, thanks so much for being here, Wayne.
Thank you so much. Great to talk with you.
You have just been listening to Wayne Pacelli, President and CEO of the Humane Society of the United States, and author of the book, The Bond, Our Kinship with Animals, Our Call to Defend Them, published in 2011 by William Morrow, an imprint of HarperCollins. For more information, check on the web at www.humanesociety.org/thebond. Again, that's humanesociety.org/thebond. On Wednesday, April 27th at 7 p.m., you are invited to join Wayne Pacelli for a reading and book signing at University Bookstore, located at 4326 University Way Northeast. The sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters program you have just heard will be on the streaming archive section of KEXP's website at kexp.org for the next 14 days. In addition, sustainability segment interviews are available as podcasts. Go to kexp.org, click on podcasting, and scroll down to Mind Over Matters sustainability segment. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening. And be sure to tune in to the sustainability segment again next week on 90.3 FM and KEXP.org.